Live from the HananiaAutos.com studio.
Live.
This is the Gus Bradley Show.
Gus Bradley Show.
Jaguars head coach Gus Bradley and former Jaguar Jeff Loggeman are brought to you by Ticket Exchange and by EverBank. The Gus Bradley Show begins right now.
And welcome into the Gus Bradley Show. Jeff Loggeman alongside the head coach, and we are behind a new set, Gus.
Yeah, it looks great. Just coming in here and see you got it all set up. There's still a few boxes in the corner, but it's starting to come together.
Yeah, I guess starting soon, maybe next week, the Gus Bradley radio show will be streamed on Jaguars.com. And so we're looking forward to that, and people can see how pretty you are on Jaguars.com.
Well, I don't know about that, Logs. I think it's going to be more. The Joe said to me the camera's going to be on you.
No, my voice. You see, we have the cameras here. They actually look like R2-D2 from Star Wars, don't they?
Yeah.
These little cameras right here, they're all facing you. But I wanted to ask you a question. Did Patrick Kavanaugh give you the rules about the new studio equipment?
No.
He didn't.
Did I do something wrong already?
Well, Logs? Patrick Kavanaugh is everything.com. And we got this new set here. And when I came in, he was over here with Pledge and a rag, and he was polishing the tabletop. And I come in here with a soda can, and I get scolded. Don't put the soda can on top of my table. You didn't get that speech?
No, I haven't. But there's a spot here he missed with the Pledge. You know, so no, he's. I know. They take great pride in this, and as they should.
He just talked into my ear. He said that he didn't say it was his table.
Oh.
I don't know about that. He kind of acted like it was his table, though. Anyway, let's go back a little bit to last week's game against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers before we look ahead. I thought it was a continuing really good impression for your offense, very productive, consistent, working on really in both facets of the game, run game and the pass game. Is consistency the challenge for your offense going forward?
Well, we talk about consistency and starting fast and decision-making with the quarterback. So, yeah, it's been a primary focus of us. We thought we had flashes last year, although we got some new team members. But overall, I think that was really the big emphasis in OTAs and mini camps. And what we came out of our self-scout is the ability to come out fast in the second half, but we didn't start fast. And, we need that consistency that we started with the second half into the first half. And that's what we're working on. But every game's different. It's a challenge. Our players are really locked into it and understand it.
Earlier in the week, I was asked a question about some of the defensive penalties. And my thought is, Telvin Smith had the one where he threw Jameis Winston down, his old college teammate. And there was a lot of energy. And my comment was to that, is that it's easier to kind of reel in the dog, so to speak, as it is to try to get the players to play with that energy or that dog in them.
Right. Well, there's no excuse. We got to clean it up, and we'll look at the penalties. But the big emphasis for our team was we want to be physical and we want to be tough. And we want to play with great effort. And with that, it's a fine line, and you got to make good decisions. And some of our penalties were foolish. They're ones that we can correct, and you just got to be, know of the situation that you're in. Critical times, we got to make good decisions, and we didn't at times. So that's been an emphasis this week, but you're right. We love the physical part. We love the toughness part and the effort.
How many penalties did you have?
I didn't have any.
Are you sure about that?
No.
I thought one of them early on was a sideline penalty against you.
No.
It wasn't?
No.
Now, there's a sideline emphasis that's going on.
Yeah.
Did the officials explain that to you prior to the game, or is that something that the league sent out earlier in the week? Because I remember seeing a video that talked
right.
about that specifically.
You know what? They did a good job. They emphasized it in the owners' meetings and when they came and met with us in OTAs and minicamp and said that was going to be a big emphasis. And, in the first game, it wasn't maybe as tight. There were times I noticed that we were on the field, and we made mention of it with our coaches. But, it's almost like the second game. Hey, let's, after looking at the first week, the first preseason game, let's really make a major point about this. And they're right in doing so. We had a couple coaches that were on the field, and one of them was a classic third down win, and we got excited. And, they sent a message, and we heard the message.
I thought one of them, they threw the penalty on one of the trainers. Robbie was on the field with a water bottle.
No, don't bring him in this now. No, he didn't. It's basically the assistant coaches. I'm not saying they'll have more flexibility with a head coach, but it really is, you know, we've had coaches, you know, officials run into coaches on the sideline, and the whole intent is to get back, you know, the coaches so there's better, more safety for the officials and just a cleaner look.
The one thing I was very happy to see against the Jets, you weren't able to get a turnover. This game against the Bucs, Dwayne Gratz has a fantastic interception, and then you get the pick six later on in the ball game. So nice to get takeaways as a defense.
It is, you know, and we felt like our first game there wasn't many rip attempts, you know, whether it was the hype of the game or the first preseason game, not as much as we saw in practice, but more came this game against Tampa. So that was good. Guys, we had a ball come out. Hayes Pollard knocked the ball out. We didn't get that one. So, you know, we just keep emphasizing it, and, you know, guys are locked into it. So, like I've said many times, a lot of times they do come in bunches. As long as you have the mindset and you see the effort towards it, that's what we're looking for right now.
You had mentioned a term earlier when you were talking about your offense about self-scouting. And self-scouting is explain that to people, what that term is and how it occurs.
Well, you go back and you look at, you know, the Jets game. And we see in certain situations, you know, what were our calls on offense between third and 2-6? And is there anything in defense can pick up on? You know, there might be three of the same pass concepts out of six plays. Well, that's a tendency. Surely the defense will look at that and be prepared for that play. So you just go back and you look at yourself in certain situations, how you play. Or it might be, hey, on second and 5-9 after a run, it might be five passes and zero runs. You know, and coordinators will look at those statistics and try to get an edge, try to get an idea how the coordinator's thinking, what he'll do in situations like that, and then they try to game plan against it.
Have you ever seen a self-scouting report? Because I'm sure, for example, like Greg Olsen, you know, you self-scout your offense. Greg Olsen is not doing the self-scouting, right?
Well, he, you know, it's all based on computer printouts, and okay. You know, and he sets it all up, and then he'll look at the self-scout. But that's one of the things when we get into the season, because of my background in defense, I'll self-scout our offense. And I'll say, here it is, Ole. Here's how a defensive coordinator, here's a defensive perspective. Here's what we would look for and if there's any red flags that show up. So last year, every week, we'd meet and go through my own self-scout that I did against our offense.
Is it one of those things where sometimes you bring something up that maybe he had no idea? Because, you know, a lot of times as coaches or as individuals, you try to kind of pride yourself on not being predictable or consistent in certain areas all the time.
Right. You have to be open to it, but Ole's pretty sharp on it. He knows, you know, kind of you always try to stay a week ahead or what you're trying to bring up. But, I mean, there's been so many times as a defensive coordinator, I've gone into games and an offensive coordinator has been, you know, 10 run and zero pass, so you play a heavy run front, and he knows that he's 10 run and zero pass, and you see four passes in your game. You know, so the NFL is so high-tech, they get all the information now. So, you know, coordinators are really on it. At times they try to lead you into it as well. So it's, you know, kind of that catch-22.
Has the game gotten too high-tech in some aspects?
Well, it elevates the game. It's just like the same thing that we were talking about with the sideline. You know, the ability to have video now.
Which the NFL has a deal with Microsoft. It's the tablets. And in years past, just to let people know, still pictures were always allowed on the sideline, where they take pictures and they can show them to the players at different parts of the play. And I think it's taken, what, before the snap? And then there's like one or two other pictures during the course of a play. Is that right?
Right. Yeah, and you get both an end zone and a sideline view. It used to be when I was in college, we had GAs and coaches up in the box, and they were each in charge of a particular player. And they would just yell out what that player did, and the guy drew it all up and gave it to the coordinator. Then advance to the still shots like we have in the NFL currently. And now they're trying to take it to another level where it's video. So, you know, I think the game is always evolving. It's always trying to make a better product for our fans. And, you know, it's good. I know our coaches really enjoy it and our players really like it on the sideline.
I like the idea of having tablets with video, you know, basically instant video after the play, to teach players in the preseason. But is it going too far to carry that into the regular season?
There's arguments both ways. You know, a good coach can stand on the sideline, see a play. Like, say you're a defensive coach and you see a route concept that's wide open, and maybe they missed it. Well, you're surely probably going to see it again. And so is that coach talented enough on the sideline to see it without the still picture, to visualize it, draw it up for your players, make the necessary adjustments and go? the full play makes it a little bit easier. It does make it a little bit easier. But I think, you know, the quality of coaches in the NFL, most of them can, they know right now. If you had your headset on, you're at a game, and a play pops, the chatter in the headset, I mean, they know right now. Hey, the nose got switched, the three technique didn't cross face. You're hearing it right now. The coaches are reeling it off. So, I think there's that side of the argument, but I think overall the video takes it to another level, mm-hmm. and I think will improve the quality of the game.
I think Bruce Arians was the one who had to quote this week because he was talking about the use of tablets, and he said it helps bad coaches.
Yeah, I did not know that, but I know that was an argument over it, and coaches are paranoid. If you have the ability to do that, you want to keep that as advantage. So there's arguments both sides, but I know that the coaches that using it and showing their players, they really enjoy it. They think it's a great technological piece that we can all use to help our players get better.
Yeah, I like the idea of it in the preseason because, I mean, the preseason is about teaching. But during the regular season, I think that's part of the gamesmanship of coaching and everything else that goes into it.
Right. You get different views. You get different views on it. But, we'll see. It's great that they tried it. You know, our motto is what? Always compete. Always trying to do it better than it's ever been done before. And so you just got to take a look at some of these things and see, does it actually improve the game?
Now, that technology has not been available for every preseason game, am I correct? It was only available in a limited amount of games.
Yeah.
You guys had it the Jets game, right?
Yeah. Yep. And we had it last game, for a portion of it. But it is good. I don't know if we have it this week. They'll let me know. From here forward, if it's game 3 and game 4.
Well, you know it's going to happen. It's a national TV game, Gus. You know, I mean, it's more exposure for a corporate partner.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. I don't get into all that, Logs. I just look at how we can help our players.
I'm here to help you think big picture.
Yeah.
All right, let's take a break here on the Gus Bradley Show. More with the head coach right after this on the Jaguars Radio Network.
Welcome back to the HananiaAutos.com studio. The Gus Bradley Show continues right now.
And it continues on with the head coach Gus Bradley, me, Jeff Lagerman. And Gus, you had a special guest in. Was it today that Lou Holtz was in?
No, yesterday.
Yesterday?
Yeah.
Where's the connection? How did you come across meeting Lou Holtz, and how did he get here?
It was great. I never had a chance to meet him before, but Monty Kiffin coached with him. Aaron Whitecotton played for him at South Carolina. So we had a couple ties, but Kiff, he set it up. He talked to him, and Coach Holtz really wanted to come up here. Heard a lot about the things going on, so just wanted to come up here and visit and watch a practice and visit with Kiff. But Coach Holtz and I had a chance. Boy, I mean, it was over an hour. We sat down and visited, and he was great. He was outstanding. I think, he's 80 years old, and you can still see the passion. And I asked him what he misses the most, and it's the relationships, with players. And he's just an unbelievable person, and just his knowledge and his wisdom. So it was good. I really enjoyed it. Really enjoyed that he made the effort to come up.
When you get a chance to meet a guy who has been very successful at Notre Dame, I mean, it's well chronicled. When you get a chance to meet a guy like him, and he spent so long in coaching as a fellow head coach, do you kind of pick his brain about coaching styles, techniques, tactics to gain maybe?
There's no doubt if you have a coach that comes in, any coach, you can always learn something. The first, 15, 20 minutes, just listen, and let them talk. So much information. And then it got to where we challenged each other on different things. And, when I say challenge, it's in a good way. Logs, it was just more, what are your thoughts on this? And, okay, how do you think of that, Gus? Well, then I would tell him, and then he would tell me back. And then you'd go on to another subject. So
give me a couple examples of challenging you on this. What is this?
Well, I would say that, one of the questions I asked him was, how do you build trust?
Trust with what?
Trust with the team, or okay. How do you just build trust overall? And the thing with Coach Holtz, and I hope I'm saying this the right way, but he's very simple. He said, "Hey Gus, sometimes we make it too complicated," and he said, "You build trust by doing things the right way. Just do it right, and if you do things right, then you build trust. You know, if you do the things right all the time, I begin to trust you. And that's with our players. If you watch them, if they are in the weight room and then they go to the training room, they take care of their bodies and they do things the right way, you trust them. And it's not complicated. It's not a complicated formula or definition. And that's also his first rules. You know, when he had three rules in his programs, and that was the very first rule, was do things the right way.
Okay, what were those other two? Do you remember? Do things the right way would be one.
Yeah, it was along the lines of care for your teammates, mm-hmm. and also commitment. You know, have a commitment to excellence. So, yeah, I mean, very simple, but strong. And everything was tied together. I really enjoyed it, And, you know, you have an opportunity to visit with a coach like that. You try to get as much information as you can. And he's at a stage where he wants to give, you know, and a great listener. And then, you know, a lot of humility, and was just great.
And he did talk to the team, and I read what some of his comments were, basically to the effect of, keep things simple. Was that his message to the players?
Yeah, it was. I mean, he talked for 30 seconds, you know, because the players had to get in. So it was more of the time that I had a chance to spend with them. But, yeah, that was his message. Let's not overcomplicate this game. You know, it's run, hit, tackle. And, you know, the whole objective is to have the team play fast. And the players need to take on that responsibility to learn things so they can play fast.
You've had the opportunity over the last couple of years to be able to have people in like Lou Holtz. And it not necessarily from football, but from other athletics, other walks of life. Who are some of the other people that made such an impact on you that you kind of walked away from the meeting or the experience going, you know what, that was great?
Well, I think in this profession, you know, a lot of times you talk to basketball coaches as a football coach, you know, and the guys that I visit. So we've had Rick Pitino and, you know, a number of guys, a Billy Donovan, you know, Buzz Williams, a basketball coach at Virginia Tech. But we've had Charles Barkley, you know, a player, to share his experiences. So I think it's always good, anything like that, as long as the same message, a message that really coordinates with what you're talking about and it applies to the players, it stimulates them, it gives them another view, and it makes the message even stronger. So, yeah, we've had a number of guys that we visit with, or I visit with on a one-on-one basis, that I think you keep engaged and you keep trying to find different ways to stimulate the players.
Did it's been a number of years since Lou Holtz was at Notre Dame. Did some of the younger players know who Lou Holtz was?
Oh, yeah. I saw right after he got done talking, Miles Jack went right up and introduced himself and shook his hand. So, yeah, the players, they all know who Lou Holtz is.
All right, let's take a break here on the Gus Bradley Show. We come back, we'll talk a little bit about the national game coming up on Sunday night against the Cincinnati Bengals, and we'll do that right here on the Gus Bradley Show on Jaguars Radio.
Welcome back to the HananiaAutos.com studio. The Gus Bradley Show continues right now.
And it continues with Sunday night national TV game against the Cincinnati Bengals. And Gus, the third preseason game is typically the closest thing that you get to a regular season game, and many coaches refer to it as a dress rehearsal. And it's an important game because it's kind of the final tune-up, the way the preseason kind of lays out for most NFL teams now. Does adding the national spotlight to that help? Because in my mind, you know, the brighter the light, sometimes the better the evaluation.
Well, I think any heightened environment is a good environment. You want to see how your players respond to a heightened environment, and we'll have one on Sunday night. So that's good. We're trying to evaluate our players. Even though it's a dress rehearsal, even though we talk about, hey, there's game planning going on, we still have a lot of evaluation to do. We still have a number of players that we have to decide on. And so we're going to put players in situations where maybe they're not a starter, but they'll play starter reps and just see how they handle it. So, you know, although it will feel closer to a game than the other two, we still are in the evaluation process where we got to make some final cuts here. So we got to put players in position to see if they can make some plays and how they respond.
You talk about game plan. Give people an idea. If a regular season game plan is 100%, what might a game plan be in a third preseason game? 50% of the packages, maybe?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, a lot of people think that it's a full one.
Yeah, no, it's not a full one. Yeah. It's more, you know, maybe your talk about first and second down would be, you know, a 45-minute segment. It might be a 25-minute segment. You know, they get a feel for how the meeting's going to go, the information they're going to get, but it's not in the detail of a regular season game.
Because you're still, at this point, you're working towards the season.
Yes.
It's, you know, you're not working necessarily just towards the Cincinnati Bengals.
Right. I mean, there's plays. The offense is going to install some plays yet. The defense installs some plays because they want to get a look at how it will look in a preseason game. Whether it's moved on to the regular season, we'll see. But we're still in the evaluation part of that, too. So, you know, it does. It does have a flavor of a regular season game because you're trying to mimic a game week for your players. You know, time-wise, when they're done each day, so they can, you know, really allot how much time they have afterwards to watch film. So you give them a feel for that. But as far as the specific game plan, not as in detail as a regular season game.
Well, one of the things that I'm looking forward to it being different, many people anticipate it, is Kelvin Beachum playing left tackle. The conversation has been that if everything goes well leading up to Sunday, that he will get some snaps at left tackle. Will that happen if everything goes smooth? And if that happens, will Luke Jokel be a left guard to start?
Yeah, if you know, right now Kelvin's doing a good job in practice. Now, so he's had, you know, how many practices and pads? Not many. So we'll be smart with him. We're going to get him out there, and he'll start at left tackle if everything goes smooth this week, and Luke Jokel will play at left guard. And then we'll have a play count on there because he still is, you know, just as far as his conditioning and wind level. And then we'll go from there. So, yeah, it'll be exciting, but it's just another phase of it, you know, and see how he responds to it and, you know, get a fat chance to see the game at full speed.
Yeah, and you still got some days. I mean, when you're talking about coming back from a knee, there are things that are unknown, you know, so you say that now, right? But, you know, things could change on Sunday.
Right. You know, and two, you know, he's coming back, and he looks good in practice now. He does a good job with the run game. You're seeing his power come back and his speed come back. So, but it'll be his first opportunity in a game coming back. So, you know, our expectations, we want him to improve. We want him to get a feel for the game, the speed of the game, and just go out there and perform, you know, and be his best.
Every game in the preseason, there's somewhat of a measuring stick somewhere in the game. And from listening to your comments earlier in the week and then from watching the film with Cincinnati Bengals of their game last week against the Detroit Lions, one of the strengths of their football team is their offensive and defensive lines, and specifically looking at their defensive line, Michael Johnson is their right defensive end. He would match up against Kelvin Beachum. And if Luke Jokel's a left guard, there's a pretty good player on the other side of the ball by the name of Geno Atkins that plays there.
A very talented front. And preseason has really worked out well for us because we had a chance to see more speed up front with Tampa. We've had some size in New York, and same thing with Cincinnati, speed and quickness really with Cincinnati. So it's been these games have been very beneficial for us as far as seeing different looks. Had a 3-4 team, had a 4-3 team. So as far as the teaching progression for our players and understanding, you know, the different fronts and things like that they're going to see, it's really played out well.
The one guy that I really enjoyed watching on the Bengals film is their left defensive end, Carlos Dunlap. He's long, he's sudden, and what a great matchup it's going to be, him versus Jeremy Parnell, because, I mean, you talk about two big guys going at it.
Yeah, very, very talented player. And you're right, his length, his size, you know, the traditional left end type, you know, but has the ability to rush, and his length, you know, is something that you have to be aware of. So, yeah, they're very, very talented up front, and even, the front seven.
Pico.
Mm-hmm.
He might have the biggest rear end in the National Football League. When you watch the film, you know, for those that don't know, when they take film of an NFL game, you have the all 22 shot, which comes from the sideline view, and then you have an end zone shot. And when the Cincinnati Bengals, where their back is to the camera, the end zone shot, and the guys are down on their stances, you see a very large rear end, and that's number, I think it's 94, D'Amato Pico, a nose tackle. We're talking about challenges for other guys across the board, but for Brandon Linder, making his now what will be his second start at center so far, that's a challenge for him as well, because this guy's hard to move.
He is, you know, and active too. I mean, he plays with a motor, and, you know, really their whole front line does. So, yeah, it's a really good challenge for our guys, you know, and I know they're looking forward to it. These guys are going to come in here, and it'll present a strong enough challenge for us that I think we'll see improvement as the game goes on. We're just excited about it because Cincinnati is a good team offensively, defensively, special teams, a playoff team. So it's a great challenge for our guys.
All right, we come back here on the Gus Bradley Show. We'll flip over to the other side and take a look at that Cincinnati Bengals offense versus the Jaguars defense. We'll do that right here on the Gus Bradley Show on the Jaguars Radio Network.
Welcome back to the HananiaAutos.com studio. The Gus Bradley Show continues right now.
And we'll flip over to the other side of the ball, take a look at the defense with the head coach Gus Bradley and me, Jeff Logman, right here on the Gus Bradley Show. And Gus, with the defense with the team you're going to be facing today offensively, the Cincinnati Bengals have a lot of talent up front. The offensive line, a very solid group. I don't know if they have any guys that are like all pro material, but it's a group that's worked together for quite some time. I know they had an injury to their right tackle last week against the Detroit Lions, but all of a sudden they plug in a guy that's been in the league for over a decade, and they keep moving along.
Yeah, they are. They're a very formidable front. As far as – you're right, they play together. They communicate very well together, and they have a good feel for each other as far as, you know, there's some of their running game schemes. Yeah. And pass protection. You know, I think their scheme is very well suited for their quarterback. They've got threats on the perimeter, good running game. So a good combination. They mix it up very well.
The longtime tackle, Andrew Whitworth at left tackle. At right tackle, Eric Winston was the longtime Houston Texan. He has been around in free agency for a while. He stepped in at right tackle when Jake Fisher, a young tackle, got hurt. And, I mean, you're talking about 20-something years of experience between the tackles. It's going to be a great challenge for Ngakoue and also a great experience for Dante Fowler.
Yeah, great experience because these guys are not only talented players, but they're wise players. So it'll be a little football 501. You know, it'll be to that level for them. But like I said, our whole team's excited about it. You know, it's still preseason mode, still, you know, not, you know, we're finished with the training camp part process. But we still know, boy, we still got some time where we got some work to do. And this game is coming at the right time for us.
Looking at Dante Fowler over the last couple weeks, scrimmage looked really good. And then the first preseason game, you could tell he had a little bit of nervous energy to him. And then against the Bucks, kind of didn't go in with his pass rush with a little bit of a plan. Now, I'm sitting there watching him, and correct me if I'm wrong, when you have speed and athleticism and quickness like a Dante Fowler, the threat of speed and the threat of getting somebody in space is really where he needs to make hay. And is that something that he needs to learn?
Yeah, it's exactly right. He did. He had some success early and then went through a tough time with the Tampa deal. But that was good. That's exactly what he needed. I think it caught his attention. I think he's really focusing on now, okay, I can't just rely on going out there and rushing a certain way. I've really got to think about this and have a plan. So that's the part of it now. He's understanding that part, and it's that speed. You know, that's what he's here for, is to bring that speed off the edge, just like Yannick. And so to get a feel for that, the tackles they're going against, and really trust it. Just let it go and trust it and allow your God-given abilities to go.
I've really enjoyed watching Ngakoue because, I mean, if you put, let's say you have Dante Fowler and Ngakoue on a numbered scale, as far as the technique and experience of what the tools are that they're using in game. You know, Ngakoue is probably, you know, 6 or 7, and then Dante Fowler would be, you know, a 2 or 3 or 4, somewhere in that range. I mean, he's still learning to be a pass rusher, whereas Ngakoue seems to have a little bit more polish to him.
Right. They're different styles, too, with both of them. So they both got really good speed. But, you know, they're just figuring it out. And you know, Dante will be fine. Boy, he had a couple pass rushes the other day in practice that jumped out at you. So it's just that consistency. Really trust your athleticism, trust your speed, and let it work for you. And Dante's a tremendous athlete, and he'll do some really good things.
You had mentioned earlier that some guys will be in with the ones or earlier into the game. One of the guys that was mentioned was Miles Jack. You know, Paul Posluszny's been playing in the league for a while. You know what Paul Posluszny can do. How soon might you get Miles Jack in there to take a look at him?
Well, we'll see. You know, sometimes some games we go off a play count. Sometimes it's quarters. But we'll let Pusby out there and get a feel for things. And you're right. No one's ever has it, and we understand that. But the chance to evaluate, you know, let's put Miles in there in the big stage with the first group and see how he handles that. But we're going to do that with, a few other players as well. You know, you'll see Yannick in there with the ones. You'll see Miles in there with the ones. We just got to get a feel. Like I said, we're still in that evaluation process to see how these guys handle certain situations.
Miles Jack has been taking reps in practice that I've seen and in the games all exclusively at Mike. Do you envision at some point him being able to learn other positions because of the experience gained at Mike? It will help him understand the other positions so that if there are packages in the regular season that you could utilize his skill set, that he may jump to auto or play will.
Right. You know what? And that's a great question. That was our plan coming into it, to have him play Mike and really learn probably the toughest position. You're controlling all the defense. There's a lot on your plate. But it requires you to know what everybody else is doing. So we knew it would slow the learning curve down a bit, but in the long run, he could have the ability to have some flexibility for us to play a Will, to play a Mike. And if we have to do that, then it should be an easier transition. So, yeah, I think for Miles Jack, the game is slowing down a bit now for him. You're seeing his speed and flashes of it. So, when that time comes, we'll see. But, I would look for him that we have to, because there's times you only have five linebackers up, and those linebackers have to have some flexibility.
All right, let's take a break here on the Gus Bradley Show. We come back, we'll talk a little Jalen Ramsey right here on Jaguars Radio.
Welcome back to the HananiaAutos.com studio. The Gus Bradley Show continues right now.
Jeff Lockerman here with the head coach, Gus Bradley. And Gus, watching Jalen Ramsey in the game, my anticipation, a lot of people say, boy, I can't wait to watch his speed and watch him cover. From watching his college tape, my anticipation was to watch his physical play. And sure enough, early in that ball game, DeMar Dotson pulls out, and all of a sudden, Jalen Ramsey is faced with taking on a 6'7", 6'8", 330-pound offensive lineman. He knifes right through it and makes a play.
Yeah, he's very talented, he has a learning curve too. He's learning the speed of the game and the receivers that he's going against. So, to see that kind of speed and decisiveness in a play like that, especially early in the game of his first game played. So, I think I mentioned this before, he plays with really good poise, and that poise allows him to really use his instincts and react fast. And that's what we saw in the game.
I was reading one of the questions that he had this week or last week, and he was asked about, the adjustment to the NFL game and the speed of the NFL game, and he was like, I really didn't notice a difference. I'm sitting there reading it going, that's because you're like the fastest man on the field. Of course you don't notice the speed of the game.
Well, let me tell you, Jalen Ramsey is great. What a great coachable player and to work with and to visit with, and he really wants to take his game to another level. And with that comes confidence. But not arrogance. He's very coachable, wants to get as much information as he can, but you love that confidence about him.
Do certain guys have an ability to elevate the play of those around them? Because that's kind of what a definition of a leader is the ability to elevate the play of the level of those around them.
Well, in our mode of thought, when we define competitors, the highest level is a dominant competitor, and that's the ability, a person that is internally motivated, doesn't need much external motivation to get him going, and then elevates everybody around him. So you see guys, we've got guys like that are on our team that have those traits, and if they're a notch below that, you want to develop them to become that. But those are very hard. You don't have an opportunity to coach many guys that are dominant competitors. But he's still learning. He's still understanding the game, and, And but he has some of those traits, so we'll see how fast they come.
A conversation here for a little bit about Blake Bortles. Last year during the regular season, 58.6% completion rate. So far in the preseason, he's at 77.8%. What's been the biggest difference with him?
Well, when you have consistency and continuity, you know, to be able to come back and have the same offensive coordinator, understand the system, put a lot of work in it last year, and it carried over to this year. And he just has an overall better understanding. Just like we were talking about Miles Jack, not only knowing his position, but everybody around him. I think Blake is at that level where he truly understands what everybody needs to do and how they perform it. So, you know, now it's narrowed down to where, hey, consistency, decision-making. You know, it's not a whole gamut of things that he needs to really concentrate on. I mean, he needs work in a lot of areas yet, but it's, okay, you got to learn the offense, you got to understand the protections, you got to understand the route concepts, got to understand the run game. You know, now he understands those things so he can really focus attention on some specific areas, and that's what he's doing. It's still preseason. He'll get a wide variety of looks once we get in the regular season, but he's doing what we're asked, and he's doing it at a high level.
At what point does the quarterback almost become a coach on the field? How long does that take?
Well, it's a, you know, it's a great question. I think every quarterback is different, and again, it's based on how many years you're in the system. You see guys in the league that may have different offensive coordinators throughout their career, but somehow the same concepts are in, you know, and the new coordinator has to come in and adjust to what the quarterback's done. So you want to be able to teach them a system that will carry over from year to year, and that's when I think they become that coach on the field.
All right, let's take a break right here on the Gus Bradley Show. We come back, we'll talk a little roster cut down, how that process works, and then at some point here before we let you go, Gus, I'm going to let you be commissioner for a day. I want to see what some of the decisions or the changes that you may make in the National Football League as commissioner. All right, so think about that. We'll do that right here on the Gus Bradley Show on the Jaguars Radio Network.
Welcome back to the HananiahAutos.com studio. The Gus Bradley Show continues right now.
Roster cuts coming around the National Football League next Tuesday by 4 p.m. NFL teams have to be down to 75 players on their roster. And, Gus, you guys are no exception. You and Dave have had, I'm sure, many conversations. How often do you guys have conversations about roster cuts or about the roster?
Well, Dave and I meet every day, multiple times a day. So it's not just a sit-down, let's go through, you know, every player on there and decide. But as we get closer, now it's, okay, we got to pick 15, you know, let's go through this again. And there's some different discussions. But, you know, we're going to wait till after this game. And, you know, guys show up, like you said. Let's see how they perform in a heightened environment. And so, you know, we have some different, you know, maybe there's this possibility, here's the third possibility, here's the fourth possibility. So a lot of different possibilities that we'll mix and match, and we'll just wait and see how this game turns out.
When the decisions are made, so let's say the game is completed on Sunday night, Monday morning or Monday night, who meets? Is it you, Gus, scouts, position coaches, coordinators? How does that operate?
Well, we try to involve everybody. And, you know, like we just had a meeting tonight on personnel. And the scouts are in there, Dave's in there, I'm in there, and all the coaching staff. So we go through the players and we just visit about their playing time, you know, what we anticipate. And then there'll be a quick shot on each player, how they're doing, how they're progressing. And, you know, so everybody's involved in that. And we get a feel for, you know, the coaching staff and the scouting department. And then, obviously, Dave and I have our views. So we gather all the information, and then Dave and I will visit about it. And if there's a discrepancy, then we'll visit with the scouts and the coaches. And, you know, we'll put all of our heads together and make sure we're making the right decisions.
With a meeting like that tonight, for example, if you've got a, let's say, player X, and player X so far in the first two preseason games and in practice hasn't been tested in this area, and you really need to evaluate player X in that area. Can you intentionally, you know, okay, we've got a guy for the Bengals here that is going to test him in that area. Let's get him in there and see what he can
do. Right, there is. You know, you maybe not specifically. Sometimes, you know, offensively, hey, let's get this receiver a little bit more targets and see what he does. You know, let's get this guy in with the one, see how he handles it. You know, so there's some general things like that that take place. But you know what? Our players, they're all going to get an opportunity to play. And, you know, we'll be able to evaluate them. And if we need to see somebody more, we might give them some more opportunities where they come in early in the game.
I think that's important for a lot of people to understand because, you know, when people talk about the preseason, a lot of times they don't understand what the preseason is for in all aspects. I mean, sometimes it's for evaluation. Sometimes it's for trying new things to see if they work.
You know? Right, and I think, too, you know, you're trying to find out the personality of your team. Are you committed to be a part of a team, or are you committed to be a part of a winning team? You know, we want guys that are committed to be a part of a winning team, not just make the 53. Okay, I'm on an NFL team, and let's roll. It's no. Well, we're going to another level here, and we need that type of mentality, that type of attitude. So not only is it physical traits, not only is it their skill set, not only is it how they play in a heightened environment, but their mentality. So a lot of different areas are being evaluated because we got to form a team and we got to pick it, you know, got to eventually narrow it down to 53.
Will this be the most difficult discussions that you have ever had since you've been here?
They're all tough. They're all tough. There's some very good players that are exceeding expectations, you know, as we watch them, especially, you know, in that, you know, 75, 76, whenever they came in, you know, you look at them, you go, wow, you know, they've really performed well in training camp. That's the tough part. Guys have come in, they've improved, they've gotten better, they demonstrated who they are, they played in a heightened environment, they did good, and you got to cut them, you know, because of certain positions that you're looking for. So it's always tough. It's always tough. There doesn't feel like a lot of loyalty, you know, Logs, in the NFL. So the loyalty turns into, hey, while you're here, we're going to put our heart and soul into helping you get better.
All right, let's take a break here on the Gus Bradley Show. When we come back, we're going to let Gus be commissioner for a day. Right here on Jaguars Radio.
Welcome back to the HananiahAutos.com studio. The Gus Bradley Show continues right now.
All right, you're not feeling too much pressure, are you, being commissioner for a day?
I got to be really careful. Huh?
You're only going to make. Let's see, 45 million divided by 365 days. So you get to be commissioner for a day, so you get 1/365th of 47 million or whatever it is Roger Goodell makes. Now, I think the reason the topic that I want to discuss is preseason. As a coach, and if you were commissioner, and you could mold preseason into whatever you want it to be. Whether it be two games, three games, whatever it may be, what is the optimum or the perfect scenario for you?
Well, there's different sides. I mean, as a commissioner, first and foremost, you know, you want to protect the game and you want to protect the players. So safety has got to be a big issue. And, you know, that's when you get into preseason games. How many preseason games are needed? And, you know, to develop your roster, to evaluate your roster. But a coach loves to have the preseason games because we need to evaluate these players. And if we're not going to have the time in preseason, then we're going to say, well, we need it in OTAs. And, you know, a lot of times coaches will say we want more time, you know, in that, you know, during the phase one. You know, we have 5 weeks total before OTAs start. Well, a coach would rather have 8 weeks. And not so much so we can meet with them, so they can have an extra 3 weeks with Milo. You know, so now before they go into OTAs.
With the strength coach.
You know, so they have more time with him so they can develop. And maybe there's life skill classes. So it's not just for us to meet with them scheme-wise and go through it. It's just the development of these players. There's so many things coming at the players nowadays that you need to be able to teach them, and the time is getting cut short. And, you know, it's hard. We're in coaching to influence because we were influenced by some coach we had. And we're in coaching because we want to have that same impact on other guys. And it's hard when your time is constricted. So it feels void there. But that's maybe not what's best for the safety of the players. Mm-hmm. So I think it's conflicting right there. But it's good discussion. I think the NFL does a good job with that. They're really conscious of the safety of the players. And how do we be smart? How do we elevate this game yet take care of them?
Now, there's a lot of conversation about rules and changing the rules. The kickoff, you know, rules changed again this year. Are there any other categories in the game itself that you would like to see changed?
Well, I think they addressed it some with the cut block. You know, that was, I think, a good rule. You saw some that put players in some dangerous positions, and not all the teams used it. But it'll be interesting to see this kickoff coverage, how teams go about it. But overall, they're doing a good job. There's always things that'll be up for discussion.
All right, thank you, Gus. You made $129,000 of your day of commissioner. Thank you, Gus, and we'll talk to everybody right here on the Gus Bradley Show in 2 weeks.